Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod, the daily podcast brought to you by the team behind Squawk Box.
NYC, this is CNBC Control 2.
CNBC's essential morning show.
PCR 2.
Every day, get the best stories, debate, and analysis from the biggest names in business and politics.
All right, we're coming to it next.
Today on Squawk Pod, retired General David Petraeus on veterans in the workforce.
Businesses for a while thought it was the right thing to do to hire veterans. Now they realize it's the smart thing to do.
Facebook's former security chief on foreign nations spying in the Valley.
The only safe way in some of these countries that you can talk about how you dislike the government, your desire for democracy and the like, is on American tech platforms.
And J.P. Morgan's Jamie Dimon, who made $31 million last year, says wealth inequality is a problem. Joe, Becky, and guest host Tom Farley weigh in.
Jamie Dimon, there's a reason he's around at this point. You know, the best risk managers.
Plus, Black Friday, super extra. The shop attainment of Singles Day. I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. It's Monday, November 11th, 2019. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue, please.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. We are live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan. Andrew is off today, but sitting in with us, we have Tom Farley. He's the chairman and CEO of Farpoint. He's also the former NYSE president and a CNBC contributor. It's great to have you here.
It's great to be here.
You ready to go?
Yeah, I'm ready to go. Veterans Day.
We are. It is Veterans Day, and we
should have
done it. It's Singles Day.
11-11.
Singles Day.
1-1-1-1-1.
I was there 3 years ago for Singles Day with Jack Ma. It is nuts.
Will you?
They have this big screen where they tally up the sales, and it just keeps going
and
going.
It's way nutsier than it used to be. The sales that they've seen today, just overnight, have been far stronger than they saw even last year. It's grown every single year.
It's just growing to the sky.
Did you know that's why? It's Veterans Day. That's the most important thing. But the 11-1-1-1-1, did you know that's why? Singles won the number one. It's 11-11.
I didn't put
one,
it together. I know that it was 11-11, the 11th
they
hour.
They celebrate singles.
Armistice Day.
They celebrate their singularity. It's a word, but they also, everyone gets married on Singles Day, which is weird. 4,000 people.
Putting an end to the Singles Day.
I guess.
And they have Taylor Swift kicking it all off for them.
Yeah, and you are not single.
No.
Disappointing so many of our viewers out there.
Stop it. Stop it.
What time is it? 6:01. That didn't take me long, did it? If you got it, flaunt it. Why would you not want to be proud?
Let's get to the news.
Okay. Good. Oh, you're right. You're right. I'm sorry. I can't help but, you know, just the elephant in the room. Okay. I mean, I'm usually looking at Andrew. Okay. So this is very difficult for me. J.P. Morgan's Jamie Dimon speaking out about the wealth gap in America. In an interview with CBS's 60 Minutes last night, he was pressed on the issue of income inequality and his own salary.
Executive pay. Last year, you were paid $31 million. Too high?
The board sets mine. I have nothing to do with it.
Well, you could return some of it.
I could. Is that going to solve any of those problems?
I don't know.
I'm going to leave it to the board to set my comp. Not you, not the press.
You've answered
my board,
every one of my questions,
my
but this one you're fobbing off.
Yeah, the board has to do it.
Well, let me ask it in a general way. Should executive pay in this country be curbed?
What does that mean?
Cut back. Should there be a way to say we're not going to have such a spread between our workers and the guy at the top?
You know, when you say something like that, you got to say, how are you going to do it? What does it make sense? I think you use the tax system to do that. I would not have cut the tax on the rich. I would have expended your earned income tax credit instead, which is like a negative income tax for lower paid people.
What's Buffett's thing? You criticize with...
Oh, criticize by category, praise by name.
I mean, I'm talking about 60 Minutes. I'm not talking about Jamie. I went back to the football game after about 5 minutes.
There was an important.
Well, I didn't. But I mean, I can interview Jamie myself and get these kind of, or I can watch us interview him. Now he needs a bigger audience, so he goes on 60 Minutes. I guess there's a reason for it. But the questions were now, Leslie Stahl. What's Leslie Stahl's salary, and what is the average CBS employee's salary? Is it how many? What's the multiple there? And what's her job? Asking insipid questions that she doesn't really understand. And what's he do? He actually has a quarter of a million people are employees that depend on him to make the right decisions for a bank, to gauge credit worthiness, to anticipate the financial crisis better than anybody else anticipated it, to protect shareholders.
She made all those points. She made the points about the quarter million employees. She pointed out that he's the last man standing, the only one who's still there since the financial crisis. I couldn't figure out why Jamie agreed to do it until I saw the second part. If you watch, there was a second part after the commercial that was all about what J.P. Morgan and Jamie Dimon have done in Detroit. And that was actually a very good piece and very thoughtful. I didn't realize, I was watching the beginning, I was like, why did he bother to do this? Why would he do this? Because it doesn't come off very well.
You get to reach a lot more people, I guess.
It seemed to me like it was a bait and switch. They did this whole piece on Detroit. I don't know if you saw it, Tom, but they did this whole piece on Detroit where J.P. Morgan has put in $500 million, or is taking $500 million after the $100 million that they already invested in Detroit, where they've done very good work and where they are making a difference, along with other companies like what Quicken Loans has done, Dan Gilbert have done, and others that have done this. But they are going block by block out in the suburbs and trying to rebuild them. That piece was very good and very interesting. I think this was the, oh, by the way, we got to talk about news.
This was the snarky MSM approach to fat cat banksters.
Don't you think we're just starting with this as a topic, too? I mean, I know it's been going on now with Elizabeth Warren for a year, but I think she thinks it's a winning issue. 60 Minutes thinks it's a winning issue. I mean, $31 million, it is a staggering amount of money. And so the thought is, you just keep saying 31 million or Elizabeth Warren billionaire, and they all feel like it's winning.
If the boards, you know, that's the problem is if it's a good old boy network and the boards are in the pocket of the CEO, that's one thing. But if it's based on, you know, creating billions of dollars of shareholder value, which might not be created by another CEO, I mean, there is a race to get good talent.
And, well, we
and you can
model.
See what
that's
happened.
Called Europe. That's you can look no further than Europe, where CEOs can do a fabulous job and they don't make outsized
over
rewards.
Here. The turnover of CEOs here is at an all time high, because if you're not any good, there's a lot of times where you're not going to keep your job. And if you are really good, Jamie Dimon, there's a reason he's around at this point. He's one of the best risk managers around. I hear you with the 31 million, but if you're a lefty, and you really got, you know, heat, and you can throw a changeup. Do you know what you make on the baseball field for that? Do you know what you make when you're a great
about quarter? $31 million?
Yeah, you make about $31 million. So, you know, I'm not.
No, Joe. You
well, what'd you say?
You
well, you
I
said
agree.
What?
You,
you
and
just
I agree.
You
I'm
just
saying
wish
there's
you...
a view. There is a certain amount of the viewing public that watches Elizabeth Warren and says, "Oh, billionaires must be terrible people." And they don't stop to say, "Well, what is the backstory? Did they earn it? Was it valuable? Did they create jobs? Did they help the economy? Would it actually be good for our economy to, you know, have billionaires go to zero?" There is a segment of the
I heard an interview this morning with the guy who advised her on the wealth tax, who we've had on here.
The Economist.
Yeah, Zuckman, the guy who we've had on a couple of times.
Right.
I heard an interview with him this morning on BBC, and basically he said billionaires shouldn't exist, right? Nobody deserves that much money is the theory that goes into it behind it.
Right. Like I said, with Green Bay, that game. Did you watch the end of that? I'm not kidding. It's snowing. It was awesome. And I had Green Bay, and they had to win by five, and by this much, they hung on.
And you didn't have to watch the interview.
DraftKings has made your life so much more interesting. It is Singles Day. That's the world's largest 24-hour shopping event. And e-commerce giant Alibaba has already set a new record in terms of sales, topping last year's record of nearly $35 billion and still climbing. Arjun Karpal joins us right now from Alibaba's campus in Hangzhou. And that's in China, too. Arjun, what can you tell us this morning?
Well, Singles Day, which kicked off just over 19 hours ago, got off to an absolute flyer. Within the first hour, Alibaba racked up gross merchandising value of $12 billion in an hour. Now, let me just dig into what's driving that growth and what's allowed Alibaba to hit that record. You see behind me now, just over $32 billion. There's been a lot of focus on imported goods, which are typically very expensive in China because they are imported and are now facing heavy discounts on Singles Day. That's attracted Chinese buyers. Things like cosmetics are doing very well. Clothing, luxury brands, all doing very well. And there was a lot of talk coming into this Singles Day. Would American brands be affected by the ongoing U.S.-China trade war? Would there be any anti-U.S. sentiment? That doesn't seem to be the case. Actually, the U.S. is one of the top countries from which Chinese buyers are buying from. Some of the brands doing well include Nike and Apple. Apple's iPhone 11 Pro and Pro Max are among some of the top-selling new products at the moment. And analysts have told me earlier that apparel and jewellery are also doing well. Another thing driving the growth today is actually consumers from some of the smaller Chinese cities, not necessarily your Beijing and Shanghai and these giant metropolises. Some of these smaller cities are coming on board, more disposable income and spending on Singles Day as well. And another part of this whole experience is the entertainment. You guys mentioned Taylor Swift earlier. That kicked off Singles Day last night, but also live streaming. You get these internet celebrities live streaming about products, and within the stream, which people are watching on their mobiles, can buy the products. That is very, very different to, say, how we shop on Amazon, for example, and it's a very Chinese phenomenon that's spreading across Asia. For now, guys, back to you.
Arjun, I remember I was there in 2016, and I had a conversation with Jack Ma where the clock behind you just kept ticking up, and I said, well, geez, this can't go on forever. And the number that year was $18 billion. And so listening to you just 3 years later, sounds like they're going to more than double that total. I mean, does this just keep going forever? It's now up to 15% of Amazon's annual revenue on a single day.
Yeah, I mean this will continue going. It's such a huge thing, and there's so much excitement around it. I mean, when you look at the likes of Black Friday and Cyber Monday over in the US and other parts of the world as well, it's a very different experience. I mean, it's kind of crazy that they had a 3-4 hour gala last night to kick off this event with Taylor Swift performing, a load of other local celebrities here in China with huge followings as well. It's a whole different experience. And actually, let me show you something very quickly. This screen here is a live stream. You get all these internet celebrities here talking about products. And at the top here, you've got all the discounts, people in their apps buying stuff as these live streams are going on from these internet celebrities. Very different experience, I'd say, to what we have when we're shopping on an Amazon or some other site as well. So that's all part of the what they call here shop-attainment experience. And that's actually helping to drive growth as well for Alibaba and many of these other e-commerce giants in China as well.
It's kind of weird. The whole concept to me is a little bit weird. It became a big retail day because you're celebrating being single.
Yeah, but it's the same thing as Valentine's Day, right? It's the opposite. It's just you celebrate the
exactly
idea.
Exactly the opposite, so. as they would say, redundantly. Yeah, I don't know. It's like I'm going to splurge on myself since I'm alone. I mean, you don't want to celebrate being alone. That's no way to go through life, I don't think, is it?
Well, you can celebrate your independence.
True.
Just because you're not hooked up with somebody.
I would say it's correlated with youth to some extent, right?
Yeah, yeah.
All I know is when I was there, I felt like I was in another universe. There were K-pop bands, and there were YouTube celebrities.
It's like Walmart's annual investor day.
You felt old.
Yeah. They have all kinds of celebrities that come in for those things.
Yeah, it was.
Did you feel old?
I felt old, but I felt like I just didn't understand the culture. It didn't seem fun to me at all. That you look at somebody trying on a dress and you say, oh my, I have to buy that dress. And they gamify it where I bought the dress and so now I can invite my friend and maybe one out of every 10 friends gets it free and everybody wants to play the game on Singles Day and the register just keeps running and I just didn't get it. I felt foreign. I felt quite fine. And I wasn't literally foreign, but I felt foreign.
You are foreign. And Taylor Swift, we know about her.
I would have liked that part. I would have liked.
Well, I know, but her record in the romance category is littered with a lot of her songs are about breakups.
Singles Day is appropriate.
And here she is over there celebrating singles. And I'm hoping she finds that love eventually. She's young. She's got plenty of time, but it's hard for her. I mean, how does she know why someone is expressing love for her? She's going to be worth $1 billion.
It's a good thing you found Penelope.
It's a good thing I've. It is. It is. I know that.
I think this new guy is the one for her, though. The new album is all about this guy. It sounds like he's.
Is that true? Yeah. What's the name of that? It's like Love or something is the name of the album.
I don't know. There's one song about Cornelia Street. Very catchy tune. It's all about.
We're analyzing Taylor Swift.
It's all about this guy.
That's because she's over there for single. But she has had, well documented,
Yes, it's been her success.
Like, by that house up near the Kennedys when she was with that kid. And she had the disc jockey for a while, right? Famous one.
Actor.
Huh?
She had an actor, Hiddleston.
Hiddleston, you're right. Didn't she have the guy, Harry Styles, with the hair, too?
Yeah. And now that you put it this way, she's...
You two are
really
teeny
boppers.
We are
teeny boppers. He more than I.
I don't think so.
We're really getting... The producers really want us
don't
to
worry about that. Don't worry about that.
Cheese will be next.
Next on Squawk Pod, David Petraeus, retired 4-star Army general and former director of the CIA... on Saudi Arabia, China.
This is the most important relationship in the world, that between the U.S. and China.
And the job market for U.S. veterans.
Don't just give a veteran a job, provide a career opportunity. Training, education, mentoring, focus groups, all of that to help that veteran truly be all that he or she can be.
This is Squawk Pod.
Stand Joe by. 3, 2, wipe up to him. His mic. Cue.
Good morning and welcome back to Squawk Box here on CNBC on Veterans Day. I'm Joe Kernan along with Becky Quick. Andrew is off today. With us, though, this morning, Tom Farley, former NYSE Group president. He's now chairman and CEO of Farpoint LLC and a CNBC contributor. We'll talk about some of that at some point. We have time. You'll be back tomorrow, too.
Special thank you to all the veterans.
Yeah, exactly. It's Veterans Day, and our next guest is helping veterans transition from the battlefield to the labor market. Let's welcome retired four-star Army General David Petraeus. General Petraeus is chairman of the KKR Global Institute and supports KKR's Vets at Work program. General Petraeus, thank you for joining us. Okay. In the last year, since last Veterans Day, how many hires?
Over 15,000 by the companies that are in KKR's portfolio. The grand total now of the Vets at Work program in terms of hiring veterans and their spouses, because we focus on them as well, is 77,600.
That's incredible.
It's a great program. General. Oh, thanks.
So it's, how many employees overall? That's a starting to
overall. It's around the world. It's probably 800,000 or 900,000. We own well over 100 companies at any given time and have minority stakes in another 50 or 70. So it's a pretty substantial portfolio.
To be perfectly honest, I heard General Mattis talking earlier about how there was a stigma about hiring vets, and to me, I thought, for me, maybe I've just sold on it or something, but I would think that it would be a reverse stigma. I would think you would seek out guys that were vets and knew how to respond in situations that I can't even comprehend being in some of the situations those guys.
Well, I'm with you, and more importantly, our businesses are with you. The businesses, I think, for a while thought it was the right thing to do to hire veterans. Now they realize it's the smart thing to do. Veterans bring all kinds of experiences, expertise, qualities,
right,
attributes.
Just being self-serving to the business, not just being, you know, altruistic or trying to, you know.
Oh, absolutely right. Now, the key, what we're really emphasizing now, though, is don't just give a veteran a job, provide a career opportunity. There's a big difference. The latter means that you invest in the veteran. You provide training, education, mentoring, focus groups, all of that to help that veteran truly be all that he or she can be.
With that said, we are well aware, and it's heartbreaking that to get back into society, sometimes it's difficult for veterans. This, one of the reasons I would imagine, is because they don't have a fulfilling career at that point. So
that could be part of it.
Does that follow that? But does that trouble ever follow them into the job? I guess it's hard to get assimilated.
Well, transitions are tough.
Yeah.
You know, you take off the uniform, it has been your identity. You leave a community in which you all serve a mission that's larger than self and feel very privileged to do that, that can be very jarring. It was tough for me to take the uniform off and transition, even into such a wonderful job as director of the CIA. But so there's no question about that, the challenges. And again, this is where employers can make a big difference. It's how they receive veterans. It's, again, helping them get into groups with other veterans. And above all, investing, training, mentoring, helping them have a career, again, not just a job.
General, my own father's retired U.S. Army. He lost his leg in Vietnam and works at Walter Reed with young men and women coming back missing limbs or otherwise severely wounded. Are KKR's portfolio companies and generally corporate America able to help those people with truly catastrophic injuries? It's very, very difficult, but I've seen kind of firsthand watching the work of my father and so many other brave souls at Walter Reed how important it is.
Well, it's hugely important, and obviously it depends on the nature of the disability. Is there a function that can be done by these individuals? And as we see throughout society, the answer to that often is yes. Not in every single case, clearly, but in many cases, the answer to that is yes. And again, employers have to make that effort. And, of course, with unemployment at a 50-year low, and by the way, veterans unemployment is even generally below that, which should be expected, given that these individuals held jobs, tough environments, turned up for work every day, difficult enemies and circumstances. But those who have come home missing limbs or come home with traumatic brain injuries, PTSD, all of these, again, society owes a great deal to them. Our VA and the medical system has to give them everything that we can possibly provide. And indeed, our employers, again, should make that effort, and many of them are.
General, what I don't want you to give advice to China on how to handle this, but that's not what I'm looking for. What should we be doing to try to support the protesters? And or, you know, when the NBA said something like that, you saw what the backlash was. What's the right approach President Trump, the administration, and Americans to take with what's happening there, do you think?
Well, it is a very delicate situation. We saw that, obviously, in the case of the NBA tweet and then all the backfilling and, right. and so forth in the wake of that. I think that this is an opportunity for China and for the government of Hong Kong to show that they honor agreements. And I think that's the approach that perhaps should be taken.
What agreements?
Well, there are agreements made for the transition of Hong Kong. And now we need to see if those agreements will indeed be honored. And I think that's a reasonable approach to this.
I hope,
by the way, that in the weeks, months that lie ahead, also U.S. and China can indeed resolve the differences and get the phase one trade agreement done. Obviously, they now have to find a location in which to do that since the meeting will not be held in China. So, again, with that worked out, that can help this relationship move forward. This is the most important relationship in the world, that between the U.S. and China. It's not just the most important to our two countries. It's the most important to the entire world. We are naturally and understandably strategic competitors. We have to acknowledge that. But this should be a relationship that can and should be as mutually beneficial as is possible. There are huge trade interests.
It's a complicated relationship for American business, though. And
it's
American
very
business
complicated
has been left to kind of navigate it on its own. These are markets that we've pushed into. But do we check our own sort of sense of what's right at the door when you're going into a market?
And extend the conversation to Saudi Arabia. It's the same discussion.
Well, first of all, coming back to China, this is a market in which we're very active. We are the biggest firm of our type, in fact, throughout Asia, including China, Japan, and India, the three big economies there. We have learned how to navigate it. We have themes in the wake of the melamine milk scandal, for example, in China. We thought, why don't we help Chinese businesses pull together the biggest dairy conglomerate so Chinese citizens can have milk that they believe in.
So you didn't go to Saudi Arabia this year, right?
I did not. No. I had a board meeting. I pulled out of last year as
well. We have to deal with Saudi Arabia, too, I guess, or do we?
Well, look, I think the big issue, in fact, for the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and for Vision 2030, which, by and large, we should want to see succeed. We very much want to see the path of reform continue, but of course along that path there have been these divergences that have caused real reservations by business leaders, not the least of which was the gruesome murder of Khashoggi. There have been other events as well.
But there have been recently spies at Twitter.
Certainly,
American company.
Yep. So again, look, the kingdom really has to look deep within it and ask, can we and what do we need to do to regain confidence of investors, because Vision 2030 relies on outside investment. That's why this limited IPO of Aramco is so important. They have to get outside money. They cannot do it just with what they're generating from the export of crude oil. It's well known. Right. Their sovereign wealth fund is now down under $500 billion, go through it at $50 to $60 billion a year, depending on the price of Brent crude. They cannot continue that forever.
And you think, you know, they're kind of an offset to Iran. I mean, if you had to, that's not a great choice, but think about it. I mean,
well, by the way, you just highlighted one of the features of the Middle East, which is that the enemy of my enemy
exactly.
is not necessarily my friend in all cases.
I mean, General,
look, we should want Saudi Arabia to succeed, and
right.
we should be giving them advice and assistance and so forth,
right.
but that has to be fairly forthright with them.
Right.
I have offered some of this to very high-ranking individuals in the government. That's the cornerstone or the keystone or whatever of the Gulf region and really beyond.
Exactly.
Their influence is huge. And if they can go down a path of moderation, which is generally where they're headed,
yep.
women driving, no longer having the guardian rule for women and so forth,
sure.
That would be very, very helpful in the region and indeed in the world.
General Petraeus, thank you for being with us, especially today on this Veterans Day.
Great annual tradition we have. Thanks. And
agreed.
Thanks to all the veterans who are out there and who will be honored on the streets of New York today.
Amen. Amen. Thank you, General.
Next on Squawk Pod, the spy who tweeted me. Facebook's former chief security officer on spying in the Valley.
These kinds of things that you used to see of other countries trying to turn spies within U.S. defense contractors, within government agencies, it's now the tech company's turn.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Squawk Pod. Two former Twitter employees were charged by the Department of Justice last week with spying on social media users for the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. The government charges that the two men, who both left the company in 2015, used their credentials to access phone numbers and email addresses of potentially thousands of Twitter users who were critical of the Saudi royal family. Twitter was once embraced by Saudis seeking free expression inside a country with state-owned media. But these charges underscore a crackdown on dissent in the kingdom, perhaps most publicly highlighted in the murder of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi just over a year ago, and Saudi Arabia's response and use of social media to distance officials' involvement. Here's Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and guest host Tom Farley.
Our next guest warns there's more to come. Join us now is Alex Stamos, former Facebook chief security officer and now Stanford University adjunct professor and NBC News cybersecurity analyst. That sounds ominous. What do you mean more? Give us some insight into to the worst case scenario. This really make it bad for us. It's cable.
Hey, good morning. So I think one of the things we need to keep in mind is that a number of American companies, and now including the tech companies, have become the front line in the battle between the United States and its adversaries from economic espionage, but also a human espionage battle. These kinds of things that you used to see of other countries trying to turn spies within U.S. defense contractors, within government agencies, it's now the tech companies' turn. Because of the amount of user data they have globally and the fact that, like in the Twitter example, that they are the platforms by which people communicate about autocracies. The only safe way in some of these countries that you can talk about how you dislike the government, your desire for democracy and the like, is on American tech platforms. But that also means that these companies now have a real moral responsibility to their users to protect that data, to make sure these autocracies can't use it to go suppress them at home.
God almighty. I'm trying to figure out the right path, Alex, and I can see I'd have to ask myself which way I would want to err. Would I want to err on kind of the wild, wild west and don't, you know, we're all adults, don't hurt innovation, or I don't want us to become China. I don't want us censoring things and you know, baby feeding all of us to what we can handle either. So, I mean, and the other thing is, should we try to anticipate the bad things that are going to happen and regulate beforehand, or do we let these things blow up in all these different areas and then say, oh, I guess we should have thought of that and then do it? I don't know which is right. I don't know which side we want to err on.
Well, I'm not sure there's a good regulatory path here. First off, these companies have no desire for their employees to be threatened and turned. So I do think there is an alignment of interests between the large American communication platforms and U.S. interests in this case. Okay. I think it's up to the companies right now to think about what kind of data they hold and what kind of access they have internally. For a long time in Silicon Valley, the model of building up engineering teams has been to allow them to have access to almost any data so they can be really efficient and innovative in their work. And I think that model is going to have to change because it puts employees in a really untenable position, especially those who have families who live in these countries. There's a number of autocracies around the world who have no compunction against leaning on people's families as a point of leverage. And I think the first work has to happen there. And then I'd like to also see some acknowledgement in different parts of the U.S. government that the domestic counterintelligence work that they've done for decades now has to extend into understanding the way these companies might be infiltrated. There's a lot of things here that private industry can't do by itself.
Am I naive to be particularly surprised and disappointed that Saudi was spying on U.S. soil in a U.S. company? Given our relationship with Saudi, given the education information, the weapons we sell them, the intelligence that we provide them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I wouldn't be surprised that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia is a frenemy of the United States. I think through all of the actions of the current Crown Prince, MBS, they have demonstrated that they are not really reforming towards democracy like was advertised, that the primary goal of the Saudi royal family is to stay in power. That obviously, the horrible, horrible actions against Jamal Khashoggi demonstrates that. So I do think this was interesting. Now, what was kind of surprising here is of all the countries that have the ability to spy in the United States, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia was not the top of anybody's list, right? The top is generally considered, obviously, the Russian Federation and the People's Republic of China. And so the fact that the first big case of this was Saudi Arabia, I think, indicates that we should be concerned about countries that have a much longer history of spying in the United States of being able to pull off the same kind of thing.
Alex, we've got to run. We appreciate it. I like that shot. I think Condi's right in that building. Yep.
Condi's, next door to me,
yes,
actually.
Yes, exactly. All right. Good to see you. Thanks. We're on first name basis, you know. Former Secretary of State.
Yeah.
I have played golf. I have played golf.
Augusta?
I don't know what you're talking about there.
Good answer.
That's the show for today. Thanks for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern.
And she had the disc jockey for a while.
Hiddleston.
Hiddleston, you're right. Harry Styles with the hair.
Too. Yeah, and the producers really want to.
Don't worry about him. Don't worry about him.
To get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, subscribe to Squawk Pod, wherever you get your podcasts. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. That will help other listeners find Squawk Pod. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.